Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the seven route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the punch on third and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
What year is this?
2009.
I thought maybe we'd see that. You just decided to do away with it altogether? Probably easier that way, huh?
Much.
Welcome to the inaugural edition of Patriots Playbook on Patriots.com Radio for the 2009 NFL season. I'm John Rook. It is great to be with you once again. For those of you who are frequenters of Patriots.com Radio and PFW in Progress and anything else that you're basically visiting and perusing and surfing around Patriots.com, we welcome you back into the fold. This is our eighth year to do this particular show as a part of Patriots.com Radio. It's great. It's great. It's football season. Now, I know that we, or I, get to take the off season off, and PFW actually gets to keep the off season mode going because of the printing of the newspaper and all that kind of stuff. But this is a program, just for those of you that might be tuning in for the first time, this is a program that will do a lot of the same things that PFW did. We'll continue with some of the thoughts that they start. Obviously, the email is still the same. Webradio@patriots.com is how you contact the show. That's WEBRADIO, webradio@patriots.com. So that's how you get a hold of us here. We'll also dive into some of the X's and O's of the upcoming game. And we got guests. Lots of times they're good guests. Now, I know that.
Not today.
No, thank you. By the way, Eric Scalavino. Thank you, Eric, for hanging in there with us.
No problem.
Joining us again. Eric was a frequenter of this program and a frequent contributor to the program last year from PFW. And from time to time, I guess, whenever your schedule allows, you'll continue to.
I'd like to, as often as possible. What I'm doing this year is I'm bringing my, laptop
nice.
With me.
Yes.
When I go out to practice, so that when I come back in the studio, I can.
You got stuff.
I have stuff. I can post stuff. I can talk to you on the radio. We can try to do everything. We can multitask on the show.
Like they're out there practicing right now.
They are still out there practicing, I believe.
And now, they are out there actually in some of their throwbacks,
yes.
Right, that they're actually going to be debuting
yep.
on Monday. And to answer some questions, I know that there are, yes, Monday night is a throwback night. It's
yep.
what they're calling an AFL legacy night. So you'll see the Patriots in the old red jerseys and the old Pat Patriot logo on the white helmet.
Yep.
And the Buffalo Bills will also be doing the same.
Yep, they'll have their the Bills will have their 1965 AFL champion logos.
That's an ugly Bill logo, though, don't you think? I mean, the new Bill logo is so
the
much
Buffalo
better.
With the skinny legs.
Yeah,
and,
grazing. Yeah, a grazing Buffalo.
A charging Buffalo. Right.
I made the point, I think, not too long ago, and it certainly wasn't here, some radio show somewhere. Since there are about 18,000 of them, I seem to have my hands in on them. Yeah, that's exactly right. But the old Buffalo Bills logo looks like an ink spot that you would try to describe.
A Rorschach test?
Yeah. It's kind of like, you know, the psychologist saying, okay, what does this look like?
Did you say Rorschach test?
Rorschach.
Rorschach.
I don't think it's Shaq. I think it's Rorschach.
What? What did you say?
Thanks for that buzzkill, Jace. That's great.
No, I know what he's doing.
I don't think you pronounced it right.
Rorschach.
Rorschach.
We'll agree to disagree, Eric.
Thank you, Mr. Cotta.
You can agree to be wrong. That's
I know. Fine. That's all right. Whatever.
Don't make me give you the Andy Hart treatment already. We're only 10 minutes in.
What Andy
really?
Hart treatment?
Yeah, no kidding. We're 10 minutes into the new season and already we're having problems. It looks like an ink spot. You know, that's all it looks like. And it's, that ink spot looks like a buffalo.
That's
what the logo looks like.
That's appropriate considering that Terrell Owens is now on that team. He's the biggest head case there is in the NFL.
I know. Lots to do to get into about the Bills, but, you know, since you were part of this last year, I think that's the one thing that I want to make sure that we express to the fans who be listening in and trying us out for the first time. Because I know that PFW Progress has a great little following. It's an awesome following, actually. It's very cool that a lot of people have caught on to what you guys at Patriots Football Weekly do from time to time. This is actually leading off, I believe, the ninth year of Patriots.com radio programming, because you guys did PFW in Progress for 1 year before we decided, you know, hey, let's do some more. Mm-hmm. And so then we added the Patriots Playbook, and we've had various and sundry other, you know, one-hour shows basically go along the way, of which, of course, the one for Christina Acker called Shop Talk coming up at 4 o'clock Eastern time in just a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then we have a fantasy football show that will happen on Thursdays. So, you know, different things that are going on.
Fantasy Lowdown.
Right, Fantasy Brian Lowdown Lowe. With Brian Lowe. And he's also a frequent contributor to this program as well, because mm-hmm. he does the Patriots Today programming that you see on the website and contributes to some of the other facets that we have here with the Patriots and Patriots.com. But because he has the camera and he's out doing practice and stuff. And that's why, specifically, you know, we wanted you as part of this program last year, because you are out there and you're watching these guys every day. You have the inner access that a lot of people are craving for, and I understand. Why else would you be here unless you could gain access yourself to some of that inner sanctum that you're able to get a hold of?
Such that it is.
Right.
You know, we are limited to some extent, like any other member of the media. You know, we only get the 20 minutes of access at practice that everyone else gets. We get the same 45 to 50 minutes of access in the locker room to talk to the players that everyone else gets. You know, you can request a player or a coach for a one-on-one for a story that you might be doing, but mm-hmm. that anybody can do that, not just us. But, right. you know, we're happy to share whatever we do get on this show, on every show on that we have on Patriots.com.
Right? Awesome. Well, that's, you know, like I said, we'll give you the latest breaking stuff. We'll give you our opinions on news around the NFL as well as what's happening with the Patriots. Typically on Wednesdays, that is the day that you get the injury report out. Mm-hmm. And
we're going to need it today, John.
Because?
Because, as you mentioned earlier about the legacy game and yeah. the throwback uniforms,
right.
a little bit of a curveball thrown at us today. When we were in the locker room, we noticed that the defense, which normally wears the dark shirts, the blue shirts, had white with the blue numbers on them. Okay, that's not a big deal. The offense was wearing all red shirts with no numbers on them. And there are no numbers on the helmets either. So when we go out there to try to see who's out there and who's not, it wasn't really a problem for the defense because we had the numbers. We could identify the players.
Okay.
It was a lot harder on offense. And we would have been able to get it done if we had been there the whole practice. But we're only given a 15, 20-minute window. And knock it off, you. Let's see you go out there and try to name five guys.
Couldn't do it.
Oh, five guys. I'm talking about five guys up at the...
I know. By the way, place. Outstanding burger.
Sure is.
Yeah, outstanding burger.
So we have several players who we don't have checked off as being in attendance, but we're pretty sure we're there. We just didn't have enough time to identify who they were. Mm-hmm. So we're going to need the injury report later to let us know who actually was there and who
wasn't. And wasn't there,
I right. can tell you for sure who wasn't there on defense. Matthew Slater, who had the horrible-looking arm issue against the Giants when he fell on that
kickoff
return.
Is he wearing a, you know,
he wasn't out there.
Has anybody seen him, though, since the injury?
I haven't seen him since the injury.
The only thing I've noticed was I think Mike Reese did a blog on Boston.com that said that he wasn't wearing a brace, but his arm was hanging limp by his side. Did you see that item?
When was that?
This would have been Monday, I think Labor Day.
I didn't see that. No.
Okay. At any rate, that's the only thing that I know about Slater since the game last week.
Right. And, you know, he wasn't out there, but I was surprised that he actually made the final cuts, to be honest with you, because when I saw that injury, I thought his season was going to be, if not over, truncated.
Yeah.
He'd be put on PUP right. or he'd be out for a few weeks or whatever. But he made the roster and he's not on IR or PUP or anything. So, but he wasn't at practice. So his situation is kind of nebulous at this point.
Wow. Truncated and nebulous in the same sentence.
I'll get used to it.
That's fantastic. Number one. Number two, I've seen the word truncated a lot lately because most of the emails that I get that come through to my BlackBerry are truncated due to size.
Oh, really? your email provider is editing them for you?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like,
wait a minute.
This is way too damn big to get in this little thing.
That doesn't seem ethical or legal.
I'm just saying. Well, you know, I get it on my regular email, but it's too big to, you know, squeeze into my little BlackBerry or whatever. Wow. So it's just truncated to size.
So Slater wasn't there. Terrence Wheatley, who was hurt in the Washington preseason game, was also not there. And rookie Myron Pryor, who's had his story is remarkable, just regardless of whether he's out there or not. Just he was a sixth-round pick,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Which University of Kentucky.
University of Kentucky, defensive lineman, at a position where – it's pretty – going into the season, it was very deep and very talented defensive mm-hmm. line. So right off the bat, he's got huge odds to overcome to even get on the practice squad.
Mm-hmm.
Then he gets injured after the first or second day of camp, and he's out for a couple of weeks straight. All of a sudden, the first preseason game, he's in the starting lineup. And he played pretty much throughout that game.
Yes, he did.
Then he gets back to practice and gets hurt again and misses some more time. And he made a comeback a day or two and played a little bit of spot action in one or two other preseason games. But for the most part, he's been out all preseason. But he's done enough, obviously, to show the coaches that he deserves a spot on the team, not just on the practice squad, on the 53-man roster.
Huh.
And he's one of five defensive linemen that have been kept on the squad. Or six. What is it? Hold on a second. Let me check. D-line. One, two, three, four, five, six.
Six.
Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's fine.
But, I mean, that's a remarkable story. Any way you look at it. I mean, not only overcoming odds, but usually if a guy isn't playing in practice and training camp,
it usually means
he's not going to make the
make
team.
The team, but he has.
Unless he's a proven veteran
right.
or whatever. This
what,
is
do
a
you what do you surmise the problem to be? Any thought?
His injury problem?
Yeah.
No idea.
No idea.
Yeah, we really aren't privy to those kind
of
things.
I know.
Usually. It's not like we saw an injury happen.
No, I never did.
Say, oh, like Slater. I
saw
Slater,
every minute of every preseason game.
So I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea.
No, but problem. He's an intriguing story more so now that Seymour's not on the team, and that means they're going to have to do a lot more rotating, a lot more going between 3-4 and 4-3 fronts.
Which also, I think, Eric, is a little bit, because I knew invariably we'd get to this today, and I'll gauge here in a moment whether or not we're all Seymour'd out around here. I'm sure you guys have talked about it extensively. I know Patriots Monday did. We did on Labor Day when I was doing the WEEI
show. But the thing is,
John,
because the story's not complete yet.
No, it's not over yet. And so to that end, that makes this whole thing more interesting about Pryor and about Seymour being let go because of the question, apparently, of Pryor's availability and the depth that is starting to shrink on that front. We saw and we surmised that one of the reasons that Richard Seymour was traded away was because the Patriots felt confident enough in the current depth situation they have on the defensive line.
You would think.
You would think. But if you're telling me that Myron Pryor's status is somewhat questionable, then what the heck are they doing, and why are they doing it now? And are there any parallels that can be drawn here between now and what happened, say, 3-4 years ago when Lawyer Malloy was traded the week of the Buffalo game and the Patriots got their butts kicked in Buffalo?
Well, that's an interesting analogy. I hadn't thought of it in those terms. But you're right. There are similarities there. A proven veteran who nobody saw this coming. As far, it's not like he was rumored to be on the block or anything. And yeah, he was in the last year of a contract. We all knew that. But that was one of the reasons we thought it helped him having him on this team this year because he was motivated. He talked about that a lot during the offseason. This was his first non-rehab offseason in several years where he actually got to go through the entire offseason program healthy. He was looking forward to starting this year. He came off a season last year where he tied for his career high in sacks.
Right.
He and Wilfork during the preseason, and even Ty Warren to an extent, the whole front of the defensive line, were doing a great job of run stuffing, getting into the backfield, cutting running backs down for losses, getting to the quarterback, making plays at the line of scrimmage. It looked like that strength of your defense, which it has been the last few years, the defensive line, was as good as it has ever been. In the preseason, it seemed that way. So you had reason to be optimistic going into the season that, well, there's some questions about the linebacker and the depth there. There's some questions about the new guys in the secondary, but we can count on our defensive line.
And now you've chipped away.
Now you've chipped away a little bit at that.
Absolutely you have. And I said to anybody who would ask, what do you think about the team's chances when they always ask? And I'm like, well, I think the offense can pick right up where they left off 2 years ago. I really do.
I
feel
too.
Very confident
I
about
agree with
ability.
That.
Keeping five running backs around, I mean, I think that's a great deal because each one of those backs can bring something special, I think, to the offensive mix. In theory, it should take a lot of pressure off of Brady, and he's got all these weapons at his disposal. There's no reason this offense shouldn't score 35 points a game. No reason for it not to. That being said,
I think they're going to need to.
Yes, that's it exactly. My thought is that I really thought that the back seven would be the Achilles heel for this team. Mm-hmm. That includes the linebackers and the secondary. And now that we've seen the linebacking core dwindle because of Vrabel's absence and now Bruschi's retirement and Sean Crable going on, the fact is that everything lined up to this team playing more 4-3. because of the depth that they've had at defensive tackle and because of some of the players we've seen. And we even saw a lot of those formations and a lot of four-man front variations during this preseason.
Oh, yeah.
And the interesting thing about that is that Patriots traditionally don't show you anything during the preseason. It's very vanilla.
Right.
You know, because they don't want to give anything away that anybody can scout on them. And yet here they are showing four different 4-3 looks over, under, two-man fronts, one-man fronts, five-man fronts, but they're showing these variations of 4-3, and then all of a sudden now your depth is dwindling at the, you know, at the tackle position because you're trading away a guy who, you know, could have been and may still be, for that matter, on his way mm-hmm. to Canton, Ohio.
Right. Well, John, you mentioned that they've been showing us a lot of different things defensively. And I'm going to take that a step further. It's not just that they've been showing us that, because that's been the Belichick way since he's been here. It's multiple sets, multiple fronts, multiple personnel groups. What surprised me was how much he has used the different formations, how much he used the 4-3. Mm-hmm. In that first game against the Eagles, it was 4-3 predominantly the whole game. They started out that way. They rotated in that way. We rarely saw the 3-4 in that game. If at all, if I recall. They came back out the next week against Cincinnati in the base 3-4. And then against Washington, it was all over the place.
All over the place, yeah.
And you can't really tell from the last preseason game because they're not really – I mean, that's a tryout
throw
game.
Throw the last game
right,
out.
You got to throw the last game
just
out.
Throw it out.
But we've seen more in the preseason, not just more in terms of the number of different ones, but more in terms of the time that they've been used. I mean, this team, you can pretty much guarantee in previous seasons, this team's going to come out in a 3-4 to start the game. They'll go into their nickel and dime packages and all that and mm-hmm. various situational things, but you can count on the fact that they'll come out in a 3-4. You can't do that this year. You don't know what they're going to come out in.
I actually like the versatility about this team.
I think that's absolutely an advantage because it's going to go week to week what their game plan dictates against whoever they're playing that
right.
week. So you're not, as an opponent, you're not necessarily going to be able to say, all right, let's plug in the film.
You're going to force your opponent to have to game plan two different ways. This is what we do when they come out in 3-4. This is what we do when they come out in a 4-3.
And this is all predicated on the fact that we're assuming that the guys that they do have are capable of coming in and doing the things that they need to do.
Correct.
Or else they wouldn't be on this team.
Right.
However, until we actually see it happening, and until we actually see them having success doing it, there's going to be a question mark in my mind, at least. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I would have to say, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Because like you said, with the offense, it's the same players, basically,
mm-hmm.
who are just 2 years older from that 07. And you plug in a couple of new additions. A
couple of great additions.
Right. Fred Taylor at running back, Joey Galloway at wide receiver.
Those are a couple of
Chris Baker at tight end.
Yeah.
You've improved on that 2007 offense.
I think so.
So I know what we're going to get from the offense.
Right.
They're going to score a lot of points. You have the same offensive line that's been intact for the last few years.
But
there's continuity on offense. I have no questions.
I think
about
we're going to be in a bunch of 35 to 24 games.
Yeah, I agree. And if they're going to win, they're going to have to score more than 30 points a game.
Probably.
Most of the time. Because at this point, I don't know what I have out of this defense. I don't know if the players, like in 2007, when Moss came in here and he got hurt that first week and didn't play the rest of the preseason, going into the first week, there were questions about, well, does Moss still have it? Does he have the speed? Can he do it? He put those fears to rest week one against the Jets. He caught the 3 touchdowns. He had the monster game. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. The questions went away immediately, and then for the next 15 games, he was the Moss of old, like he predicted in April.
Right.
I don't know if Sean Springs, who's missed the entire preseason basically, is going to come out in week one and going to cover T.O. and is going to be the cover shutdown guy that we expect him to be.
We won't know until we see it.
We won't know, exactly. We didn't know about Moss 2 years ago. We didn't know about Welker 2 years ago. Now we know. But on defense, there's so many questions. I was just writing a story about this for this week's issue of PFW. The Patriots have lost at every position on defense a starter or a key veteran this offseason. In the defensive backfield, Rodney Harrison retired at safety.
Correct.
Ellis Hobbs was traded to Philadelphia.
Right, at cornerback.
Inside linebacker Teddy Bruschi just retired. Outside linebacker Mike Vrabel traded to Kansas City.
Right.
Now defensive line, Richard Seymour, traded to Oakland, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Pending his arrival there. That's every single position on defense.
Well,
you've lost somebody.
We also
somebody
knew,
important.
Though, last year. I mean, the last time we were on these airwaves, whatever you want to call it, in the internet would have been right prior to the championship game last year, or the game that the Patriots were in. Did we lose a game last year? I don't even remember. Okay. Anyway, prior to the playoffs, and I remember we all were thinking, and we said this throughout the course of last season, there's no doubt in anyone's mind that this team must get younger and it must get faster. And getting younger doesn't necessarily mean you will automatically be faster on defense. But those were two things that had to happen in the offseason as major improvements. Trying to find some other younger, quick players that could complement Gerard Mayo, because we all knew that he was the great find of the first round last year for the Patriots.
Absolutely.
Well, there's no doubt that they've made huge strides in toward making this team defensively younger since the last time we had this program on last January. Fact is, though, we don't know if that makes this team better yet until we see them play. Having six starters from last year's defense replaced, I believe it is. Is that right? My last count was six.
Well, the five guys we just
that
named.
You just mentioned.
And who else are you counting?
Well, technically, let's see. Well, Adalis Thomas is back. I think I counted him as a starter that's back. So yes.
Oh, because he hurt his arm at the end.
Right. Okay, so six starters are back from the defense a year ago, but here's the thing. You've changed over half, minimum. You've changed over half of your defense from last year. And we don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Now, the question that I have here, and this is the question that I have for our listeners today, and again, you can respond webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482, the telephone number. It's still the same number, right, Jace? 508-543-7482. You can call in and participate in the program. But the question that I have is, in Bill Still, do you trust? Because if this team falls short now defensively, and we can see the offense scoring 30, 32, 35 points a game, but the defense has given up 24, 28, 30, 35 themselves.
Right.
Okay. Where are you putting the blame here?
Well, it's interesting you bring that up. I'm going to be writing my commentary this week about this very issue. All the surprise moves we've had this season.
Maybe you should now email in or call and give Eric some ideas for his commentary.
Sure. my political hero, John, was Ronald Reagan.
Okay.
And he had a very famous...
Good one to have.
Very famous and well-used phrase he used to throw out there. Trust, but verify.
Mm-hmm.
You remember that?
Yes, I believe that had something to do with the Cold War, right?
I still trust Bill's decision-making, but I'd like to verify it by seeing results, by seeing the results on defense. And up to this point, what I've seen in the preseason has given me cause for concern.
Right.
I've seen Lee Bodden, who's been the free agent corner that they signed from Cleveland by way of Detroit for a year. He's been the steady starter at right corner. That's the good part.
Mm-hmm.
Bad part is I've seen him give up too many plays and miss too many tackles for my liking. But again, it's in limited preseason action, and you really don't know how much of what we're seeing is very little of it is actually game planning against the opponent, giving away too much stuff that they're actually going to be doing during the regular season. So it's a little unfair to judge what we've seen in preseason and try to transfer that over to the regular season. But again, Jonathan Wilhite on the left side, Terrence Wheatley in the backup role, Darius Butler, all of these young, new, unproven guys, and Springs, who we haven't really seen at all. On paper, when we were going into this training camp, we were thinking they've made significant upgrades at that position. Yes, in theory, but we've yet to see that come to fruition. We've yet to see them prove that they are who we think they are.
I see Dennis Green, a vision of Dennis Green now. They are who they thought we were, or whatever
the
hell
he said. You know, you look back over the history, letting Lauri Malloy go, that worked out for the Patriots.
Yeah.
Letting Drew Bledsoe go and going with Brady, that worked out for the Patriots. Right?
Yes.
All of the surprise moves that you can think of over the years that Bill has made have pretty much worked
Generally speaking, it has.
So I have to give him the benefit of the doubt. I mean, the guy's done more than enough to prove that he knows what he's doing.
Well, then it really comes down to a choice of one or
still,
two
until
things.
Until you actually see it, you're a little hesitant. You're a little nervous.
Let's find out what side of the fence our listeners are on. You know, is it blind trust, blind faith in Coach B, or trust but verify, as you suggest. Now, I think I tend to side toward you. I know that a lot of fans would side toward Coach Belichick. But this is an extraordinary series of events, and it was an extraordinary move that was made over the weekend, this past weekend, to trade Richard Seymour away. I mean, let's face it. Obviously, the guy still got some sway somewhere within the NFL if a team, and it doesn't matter if it's the Raiders or, you know, whomever, even though everybody, I think, seems to think that the Patriots got certainly the best end of this deal with a future number one. Fact is that they still got a one for him, even if it's a future one. But I heard this mentioned on a talk show here recently, and I really thought it was actually a good point. Fact remains is if this were the Boston Red Sox trading, I don't know, let's figure out an integral part of the team, even though he might not be the most valuable player. Let's say they traded Jonathan Papelbon and got a future number one. Not a number one next year. Let's say they got a future one. Red Sox Nation would be up in arms. It would be exploding. Why are you doing this now over a guy that arguably is still very much an integral part of what it is that you're trying to do? And I would argue that Richard Seymour is still very much a part of that. Regardless of what he's done in the past and his penchant for, injuries or, his, proclivity to kind of, hang back if there was a contract dispute or whatever, we've seen that in the past. That's fine. It was business for him. But when the man was on the field, he generally produced. So in that regard, I'm wondering now. I'm just wondering. Something somewhere is amiss. Something somewhere had to give this organization a little bit of foresight, a little bit of something to say, you know what? I just don't think we need to continue this path. Let's see what we can do now. And let's trade him now while right. We know we can get this big value for him. And I don't know that that's the best thing to do here because, I don't know about you. I certainly think that majority of fans would feel this way. If you are a Patriots fan, you want to win now.
Absolutely.
If you're a Patriots fan, Eric, you want this team to win now because it would be your fourth title this decade, and you could firmly and once and for all stamp yourself as the team of this decade. Hey, listen, keep in mind now that if the Steelers come back and win this year, they can lay a claim to this decade just like the Patriots can. You're talking about legacy. You're talking about a lot of things here. And there is something in the NFL to team of the decade. Mm-hmm. The Patriots have never had this opportunity before, unlike what they have now.
Right.
And I was just a little taken aback like that because I really thought legacy meant something here within this organization. I'm beginning to think that's not necessarily the case. I know why they did this because they want to perhaps ensure that this team remains competitive on down the line. But given the fact that this franchise has generally shunned top draft picks because they don't feel like they're worth what you have to pay to keep that player, that they go out and they get a one. It is certainly interesting to note that they went out and asked for and got a 2011 mm-hmm. first-round pick as opposed to a 2010 first-round pick from Oakland because next year is most liable to be an uncapped year in the NFL, and 2011 could even be a lockout year in the NFL, which means the Patriots wouldn't have to pay anybody anything if indeed there is a lockout.
Or there could be a rookie salary cap imposed.
Well, I think that's the other
starting
thing.
Starting in 2011.
Right.
Which I think is more along the lines of what the organization might have been
thinking,
projecting.
And so you wouldn't be paying some of the exorbitant numbers for high draft picks that you see, like, the Matthew Staffords of the world that are, getting now. And they thought, well, maybe in 2011 this number one draft pick will be worth a heck of a lot more, certainly financially to the organization, than it would be in 2010. Just because of the amount of money they would have to pay that particular individual who's that number one draft pick.
Right. And I think you talk about the hesitancy to take, the reluctance to take first-round picks, this organization, or at least high first-round picks.
Right.
They've worked out when they've done so. I mean, Jerod Mayo obviously proved that last year. This is not exactly a high first-round pick, but, I mean, Ty Warren certainly worked out. Vince Wilfork certainly worked out. I think it's when you get lower in the round that where the questions start coming in. Maroney, he's made the team again. He most likely will start for this team on Monday night.
That wouldn't shock me. No.
They're still in his fourth year now, he still has something to prove, I think, to a lot of people, including himself probably. Mm-hmm. Benjamin Watson, certainly, I think a lot of people were surprised, maybe even him, based on the way he was talking after the Giants game, that fourth preseason game, that this might have been it for him. Yet they go out and trade David Thomas, and Benjamin Watson stays on the team. You start to look, as far as the first-round picks go, I think when Bill has a high pick like that, I don't think he's necessarily reluctant to use it unless he feels he's got a Mayo-like player, a Wilfork-like player, or a Ty Warren, someone like that. And I think, you know, reviews have been mixed. Brandon Merriweather was a low first-round pick.
Yep.
I think he still has a little bit to prove. He's starting to show a little bit more, but, again, I'd still like to see him improve his tackling. I think if he does that, he's going to go a long way to proving that he's worthy of that first-round status. He's certainly – the leadership role is starting to come on with him, but the big question about him is his tackling. So it's been hit or miss with these first-round picks in the Belichick era, I think. So, but to your point about about waiting another year to get
it. Is he taking a little pressure off of the fact that he's been hit or miss there by delaying?
I think it just comes down more to the fact that they don't want they saw the type of you don't want to pay a Matthew Stafford type deal to a guy who's not done anything, who hasn't proven it yet. And I think in 2011 they're expecting that the league will come in with some normalcy and rein in those big contracts. Next year is going to be an interesting one all around the league, free agency, draft-wise.
Next year will be like the Wild Wild West.
So I think they want to avoid having an extra pick in next year's draft. So I think it was a smart move to wait till 2011, wait till the dust settles a little bit.
But like I said, if this were a Red Sox move and you had an integral part of your team, an important part of your team, being dealt away, and you weren't going to receive, shall we say, immediate gratification in return, that you had to wait 2 years to get something in return for this integral part, people would be upset beyond belief around here. So why are we not hearing more people upset with this move?
Because I think Bill has the track record that he's shown that he knows what he's doing. And I think people blindly do trust what he does.
So, again, then we're talking about you believe that the majority of fans are in blind faith, Bill, we trust.
I think they're shocked. But I think they say, well, they balance that with, well, Bill's done this to us before. We know he knows what he's doing. Though I think you're starting to see a little bit more, at least from the emails we're getting from our SPFW inbox and some of the people who've written into the show. I think you're starting to see a little bit of crack in that, because you look at moves just this year. It's always, what have you done for me lately?
Sure.
And they go out and trade for Greg Lewis. He doesn't make the team. They go on and trade for Alex Smith. He doesn't make the team.
Yeah. Those were two, I thought, curious cuts, especially the Greg Lewis one.
They draft Kevin O'Connell last year, who looks like he's the heir apparent. They cut him this year after a year and a half in the system.
Yeah,
they bring in another quarterback, Andrew Walter. He doesn't make the team.
Right.
You're left with a rookie free agent backing up Tom Brady at this point.
Who, by the way, did have a very good final preseason game, but keep in mind that he did all of his moves against the Giants' second and third teamers.
Exactly. So I think you combine all of those things, all of the surprises that have happened this year, and people are starting to say, well, and it has been 5 years now since they've won a Super Bowl.
Right.
That's true. So I think people are starting to say, well, we trust him, but we haven't really...
Well, but again, it's what have you done for me lately? You just brought that out. I mean, this team has not... I mean... Obviously, I'm kidding earlier, but this team, last I checked, did not make the playoffs last year. So in that regard, shouldn't there be a little bit more of a sense of urgency to have this team win when you know you have especially the offensive pieces that you have here? You have the potential for another record-setting, NFL record-setting offense this season. I don't know of any defense right now, Steelers notwithstanding, I don't know of any defense right now in the NFL that can stop this team. You might slow it down, but this team will adjust offensively, and barring injuries, this team should be scoring over 30 points a game.
Yeah, I expect that too.
Why would you want to get – I mean, aren't championships built with a strong defensive backbone?
I think – I mean, I'm only speculating, obviously, but I wouldn't think Bill would have made this move unless he felt like he could get away with it. In other words, I think he felt like he had enough in reserve – on the defensive line, that Yeah, sure, it's going to chip away a little bit. It's going to alter how they game plan against other teams. But I think he feels like at this point, the risk-reward ratio was in his favor. I think he felt there was more reward and less risk if he made the move now as opposed to 2 years from now or... You know, certainly wouldn't have made this move 2 or 3 years ago.
I understand the financials of it, and again, this is what I keep going back
to.
No,
I'm not even talking about financials.
Well, but the financials of it is you basically are forced to choose between Seymour and Wilfork. You're forced to choose because both of those guys are in a contract year. Forget Tom Brady being in a contract year after next year. The fact is that you're forced to choose between those two guys. You can only franchise one of them.
Well, unless you want to go into next year, which could be an uncapped year, and give everybody huge contracts for 1 year and then let this play out again after next season. But this isn't
honestly
the way this team does business.
I understand that. But you know what? If it's an uncapped year, you're talking about, as I mentioned earlier, this is the wild, wild west. Okay? You're going back where you're basically going to be shooting people in the street, literally. Figuratively, not literally. Figuratively, within the confines of the NFL, and you're going to take chances on guys. You're probably going to get some teams like the Oakland Raiders, who have been down now for the last 7 years or so. They feel like, you know what, let's throw some money in this year. Let's get competitive right away because the whole thing is going to wash itself out once, you know, we get the rookie cap in place and everything else out. You're going to find the have-nots of the league next year, Eric. Throw money at people. I really believe this.
Oh, I
would
be surprised.
They're going to throw a lot of money at people. They're going to overpay for some of these guys.
Absolutely.
In an effort to be more competitive more often. You're going to see guys like Wilfork and or Seymour, who would have had option years, take some of these big contracts from some of these lousy teams because they're going to take it while they can, realizing that 2011 may or may not be a football season.
In other words, every team next year is going to be like the Redskins.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, everybody will be like the Washington Redskins.
Except this team.
Okay, but I'm wondering why you couldn't make an exception in the case of Seymour and Wilfork and franchise one, pay the other. And maybe you franchise Seymour next year at the $12 million number, which I believe is what it would have come in at, and you still do your deal with Wilfork, and then you realize you let Seymour walk after next year, and even if somebody else does sign him, don't you get a third-round pick in return?
If somebody signs your franchise player?
Yes.
If somebody signs your franchise player, you get two first-round picks.
Well, you choose not to exercise the option. You say you franchised him once. Okay, you can franchise him again.
You can franchise him again.
But let's say you choose not to. What's the minimum you'd get?
Oh. That's a good question.
Is it not a third?
I
could be wrong about this. I don't know, but
I'll have to look it up.
I think you still get something in return. It may not be a one. Obviously, if it's a franchise player and you still lose him, you get two ones. Correct?
Yeah. Yeah, good point, though, on the second franchise.
Well, I'm just, I'm all about, and again, I'm looking at this somewhat myopically, all right? I want to win now. I want to take advantage of this team as it is presently constructed, knowing that I've got a dynamo, maybe end-all to be-all offense this season. And I want to make sure that my defense does well enough to keep me in games and can stop people on third down, which is the major problem that this defense had a year ago. They couldn't stop running water on third down, and we know that. They were giving up 45% on third down last year, and it ultimately killed them.
Well, and I think that had more to do with the passing game and not the running game.
Maybe.
But I agree with you.
Maybe.
That third down was a problem.
But you still had to make changes. We still know that the defense was too old and not fast enough, not quick enough last year, and you must make changes in the offseason. Well, they've made changes all right.
And they have to get
to
the quarterback.
Yeah.
They have to get the quarterback. They haven't been able to do that in the last few years.
And maybe that's part of the reason why they decided to go 4-3. I think it's part of the reason why they brought in a guy like Derek Burgess in the offseason, thinking mm-hmm. that he still had some gas left in his tank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you play him at that same position that he normally played in Oakland. You put him at defensive end on a 4-3.
That's where we've seen him.
And he plays rush end rather than outside linebacker. And I actually think that's the smarter way to go. I think that's the smartest way to play.
Well,
but then why are you giving up your two-gap tackle in the middle and a guy like Seymour, who still is performing at an all-pro level, arguably?
Yeah. The only thing I can assume is that they saw enough out of their rookies and other guys that they think they can get away with it at this point, and
wow.
they might as well get something for them while they can.
Big risk.
Certainly is a risk.
This is a legacy risk
here. Bill was asked Actually, all three of them were asked yesterday. There were conference calls with Bill Belichick, Dean Pease, the defensive coordinator, and Nick Caserio, the director of player personnel.
Nobody wanted to address Seymour.
Well, they didn't want to address it, but all three of them were asked this question. Is your defense better now without him?
And?
And Bill's response was I think, the best one, and the one I would have given, too. We're going to see starting this week. You really don't know until we see it, John.
He could have said potentially yes, but he didn't.
He would never say something like that.
Well, but I'm just saying he could have.
He could have said really a lot of things, but he. I think that's about as good an answer as you're going to get from him on that. And but in this case, I think it's really the accurate one. I don't know what we're going to get out of this defense. Well, I don't know if they're going to come out again. They could come out, however they come out against Buffalo, could be completely different than how they come out against the Jets in Week 2. And against the Titans in Week 3, Baltimore, and all on down the line. I don't know what we're going to get from this team. How they're going to come and line up.
Well, I think
who's going to start? Who's going to be a reserve? If they're going to play nickel, who's going to be in that personnel grouping? It could all change.
I think part
week
of the
week.
I think part of the thing that's in the Patriots' favor is the fact that they are playing a Buffalo team that just fired its offensive coordinator
in Dirk
Schoener.
Yeah.
And I made this observation when was this Monday, and probably last Friday during Patriots Friday as well. But their new offensive coordinator, their former quarterbacks coach, is Alex Van Pelt. I actually covered him in high school at San Antonio Churchill High School, and he was the quarterback at Churchill for the Churchill Chargers in San Antonio.
Really?
Before he went off to the University
of Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh,
had a great career.
Which I followed him there as well. I kind of followed him here to the Northeast almost. It's kind of funny how it's worked out that way. And I actually think he's a very bright guy, and I've always thought that he would have made a good coach someday. And sure enough,
here he is.
He's got the chance now. That not, you know, without saying, I mean, the fact is that the Buffalo team is still in a little bit of disarray. Their starting offense did not score a touchdown. Is that correct? In the preseason?
I think that's right.
Again, take it for what it's worth. It was preseason. But their starting offense, their projected starting offensive unit, save for that opening couple of series that I saw in the Hall of Fame game against Tennessee.
Right. Oh, yeah. And that's the other thing.
Was miserable.
They had that stat is even exacerbated when you consider they had one extra preseason game than everybody else.
They had five preseason games. Five!
And they're trying to work in.
We can't even stand playing four, and they had five!
And they're trying to get a new receiver into an offense that's, I mean, it's not really a new offense. I mean, they're going no huddle, but there are new aspects of it.
Yeah.
You know, you have to get timing down. You have to, boy. I mean, you're right. If there's a time to go against the Buffalo Bills, I mean, again, Bills only lost to him once in his time here. That was that 31-0 drubbing in Week 1 when they let Lawyer Malloy go.
And there were a lot of, see, I told you so's that day. Now, obviously. Well, we know what happened at the year after the year completed.
Yeah, they beat them 31-0 in
they reversed
Foxborough,
that score in Foxborough
went
and went on to win the Super Bowl. So when you look at the big picture, I understand. This is why I feel like the majority of our respondents, a couple of them are coming in through already on the email inbox, and the subject matter is blind faith. That gives you any indication how most of the fans feel. But this
I'm
is
not
why,
surprised.
But this is why I asked the question, because I think our people who listen to this program are generally very smart football people. They care. They understand the nuances. They know the X's and O's. This show is for everybody. You don't necessarily have to be a real dyed-in-the-wool 24/7 football follower to appreciate, I hope, some of the nuances of the show, because we are going to get into some of that here. If you want football talk, we're going to give you football talk. But we're also going to talk about rumor and innuendo and have some fun with it at the same time along the same lines. And we're not going to just talk about the Patriots. News of the day, hot topic items around the entire NFL.
Some college football here and there.
Because of certainly why. Not the fact that I'm a Texas Longhorn, but because there are a lot of players, you know, very good players in the NFL that certainly could be, you know, on the Patriots draft sites come next April.
Plus, it's fun.
We always look at futures, and it's fun. It's still football.
You doing Thursday broadcasts?
I am.
Later in the year?
I am. My first game is, much to Jason's chagrin, I think, my first game is Colorado at West Virginia on October 1.
Why is that to your chagrin?
Well, because I'm not here to do the show.
We have to bring in fill-ins and, you know,
because I won't
be play the crybaby soundbite for you
for myself.
Yeah,
well, what do you do
it last year?
What are you doing when he's not around?
Sometimes I would sit in his chair for
him. He would.
Sometimes John would call in, and we would sort of share the duty. Sometimes we'd have Whenever we'd have some extra guests.
And whenever I can, that'll be the case again. I'll call in and we'll share it. But we also have procured, though.
I was just going to say, you and I have already kind of cornered a fill-in last week.
Yes, Chris Price, who covers the Patriots for WEEI.com.
Yep.
And I co-hosted Patriots Friday with him last week. Mm-hmm. And Chris has agreed to sit in and even fill in from time to time. So, and I think our listeners, if you're not familiar with Chris, you'll be pleasantly surprised by this guy. He's very smart, very intelligent, very bright, very football-minded. He's got a good radio presence about him. In fact, I believe that Chris is also going to be a part of WEEI's NFL Sunday program if you're listening locally. You could also stream it on EEI.com on Sundays, and we'd allow you to do that since we don't have any programming here on Sundays. Right, Jason?
Yeah, but you could listen to 98.5 The Sports Hub and hear from Paul Perillo and Andy.
Ooh, competition. Competition.
Yeah, and those
competition's
two guys,
good.
Those two guys outweigh Chris by a lot.
Well, that's true.
Just Andy's head.
Yeah, that's also true. But the competition's good. I like it. You know, I like the fact that we'll have, you know, competing forces, and it's up to you as a listener, as a consumer of the NFL and the Patriots in particular, to decide who you side with, who you like, whose insight that you might agree with or disagree with, or who gets you to listen. Mm-hmm. Bottom line is, who gets you to log on? Who gets you to take your time out of your day and contribute to the program? You know, that's part of how we're kind of all working it out here.
Check it out.
Yeah, check it out. That's exactly
Thanks,
right.
Fred.
Check it out. Web radio at patriots.com is how you reach us here in the program. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is our telephone number. So this is our inaugural edition for the 2009 football season of Patriots Playbook here on Patriots.com Radio. We will be here Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays during the course of the season. Obviously, when the Patriots play on Mondays and Patriots Monday is pushed off to Tuesday, like it will be again next week, we'll be here Wednesdays and Thursdays. We'll be here talking to the Patriots with you from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time. And, of course, if you're not listening to us between 2 and 4 p.m. Eastern Time, it means that you're downloaded the podcast. And if you can't make this appointment listening, which I hope you can, but I understand that, you know, life does get in the way every once in a while, you can always come back here to Patriots.com and you can download the podcast and play it whenever it is convenient for you because it will be recorded here on the website. That's the beauty of podcasting. You can do that with PFW2 and any of the other audio features that you find here.
This
on the
is
website.
John Hanna, Patriot Hall of Famer. Download the podcast now.
Well,
if I were you, I would
finish it first, but
but I would still do what he says.
Yeah.
I would still do what he says. So we're very, very happy that you're here. And if you are a longtime listener or you follow this program at any point over the last 7 years leading up to this year number 8 of our program here, and you just want to say hi and you want to just check in and you want to kind of get, you know, our thoughts or, you know, our feelings on the new year as a whole, by all means, drop the email now, webradio@patriots.com. But I also want to know, in blind faith, in blind trust, do you have in Bill Belichick? Or are you like me, or Eric in this particular case, and trust, but verify? There's two different ways that you can look at this whole Richard Seymour scenario. It is big news. It is still top item news throughout the entire NFL because Richard Seymour has yet to report for duty in Oakland, which means the deal's not finalized yet.
Right. What would happen? Well, that's the thing.
What would happen?
That's the unknown here.
We don't know.
I mean, we can assume that if he doesn't show up, the trade is null and void, and he comes back here.
But that's not necessarily the case.
That's not necessarily the case.
Because the Patriots could give him the 5-day letter, mm-hmm. which means you have 5 days to report, yada, yada, or you are put on the suspended list for the season, which mm-hmm. means he won't play for anybody all season long. And not only does he lose his salary for the year, which is $3.7 million, somewhere in that vicinity, right?
$3.8 million.
But he also loses the year of
accrued
time.
Seasons.
And so that means he does not become a free agent next year. He would have to wait until 2011 mm-hmm. to be a free agent.
And I don't think he's going to do that.
I don't think so either. That would cost him a lot of money.
But if he does, wow. You talk about...
Well, we don't know.
We don't know yet.
Until he says something or until he shows up somewhere or until somebody tells us, hey, the deal's off, we don't know.
Yeah, it's very – I mean, and the answers we're getting from Bill and his staff are not clearing things up at all because they're not addressing it. They're saying we don't have the rights to him, so we can't talk about it. Well, the Raiders really don't have the rights to him either because he hasn't shown up yet.
That's right.
He's not Raider property yet.
Yeah, in fact, Cable,
so he's sort of nobody.
Yeah, Tom Cable said, you know, I can't really explain other than the fact that he has some situations to take care of first.
With the Patriots.
Yes, alluding
specifically,
to the
fact he said
that he has some things to take care of with the Patriots.
And so that's why we were trying to get answers from Bill and his staff yesterday. What are those issues? They won't talk about it. So who's it's like a hot potato here.
Have any of you guys at POW tried to get a hold of any Oakland media to find out what they know?
No, I don't think we have.
That might be also something if this continues here, if not for this program today, for tomorrow's program as well. Mm-hmm. You know, I know we're playing Buffalo next week, and I use the collective we here. I'm not physically suiting up, thank the Lord, otherwise we'd be in real trouble. But the fact is that, you know, this is a story within the story of the game this week.
Yeah, because, I mean, I would assume if you're Tom Cable and the Raiders, you want Seymour to play for your team on Sunday.
Sure.
They got the Chargers? Is that who they're opening up against?
I think San Diego, yeah.
I mean, you're going to need every talented player you can to go up against that offense.
No question.
They would want Richard Seymour in uniform.
No question.
The longer it goes into the week, the less likely it is, if he does show up, that he's going to get to play and have any sort of impact in that team. I mean, unless you just throw him in and say, rush the quarterback.
And talk about getting off to a bad start with your new team.
Yeah.
Well, I feel pretty certain, and I've seen this written and talked about and some other things, that Richard's doing this primarily because he wants some guarantees that he won't be franchised next year. I think that has...
Your guess is as good as anybody's
again,
at this point.
Again, it's all supposition. We don't know, but, I mean, that logic tells me that's what he'd be looking for, because if he's going to go play for Oakland, it's, all right, I'll go bust my butt for you, but I don't want you to franchise me next year. I want the ability to go out in the open market. You know, that would be my guess. You know, he's trying to get some assurances one way or the other that will happen. If you're Oakland, why would you do that? You just gave up a future number one. You're our property. Why? We have the right to franchise you.
What a story, though. It has legs.
It has big legs. Webradio at Patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is our telephone number. Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly, PFW in Progress, is with us. I'm John Rook, and we're inside the Patriots playbook.
At American Airlines, we know it seems like you're on the road almost as much as your favorite sports team. We know you've scheduled a business trip to a city where your team happens to be playing that night. And we know that on every trip, you inevitably forget to bring a toothbrush. But you never forget that old pair of socks you wear on game day to bring your team luck. We know for you, it's not just a seat on a flight to a place. It's a seat on a flight to your life. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Man, it's football season. I mean, usually the house is decked out by now. You know, the football lamps and the big wall posters.
Dude, it is decked out. But this year, I'm working on a higher level.
Yeah, I'm not seeing it.
Well, you're just not on that level. I've got Razor Sharp Fios TV from Verizon, so I don't just watch the game, I feel like I'm in it. The whole place has ultra-quick Fios internet, so my computer becomes my own personal press box.
Right, so, no little football helmet soaps in the bathroom this year?
Sadly, no. But with ESPN MVP, I get stats, scores, and highlights sent straight to my wireless phone.
With Verizon's Fios TV and internet, plus wireless apps like ESPN MVP, you have everything you need to take your football experience to the next level. Verizon, official telecommunications provider of the New England Patriots. Select VCast phone and VPAC subscription required. Fios available in select areas.
You are so far beyond football-shaped serving trays.
50 seasons of New England Patriots football, 3 Super Bowl championships, endless memories.
It's good!
It's good!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' three Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, three out of four. Yes, it's a dynasty.
And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to the Hall at PatriotPlace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
I think that's an appropriate song. Song for today.
That's right.
Football season starting. The boys are back in town. And yes, Patriots Playbook is back as well on Patriots.com Radio. I'm John Rook. He's Eric Scalavino from PFW. You're inside the playbook here on Patriots.com Radio. We'll be here Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays throughout the course of the NFL season right here on Patriots.com from 2 until 4 p.m. Eastern time. Or if you can't listen to the program live, as we are right now, as opposed to unlive, download the podcast. Web radio at patriots.com is the email address. 508-543-7482 is the telephone number. And again, if you'd like to just say, hey, what's been shaking? How'd your offseason go? That's fine, too.
Went by quick, John.
It did go by season.
It was the longest possible offseason.
Yeah, very quick.
Ending for the Patriots as it did before New Year's and starting a week later because of the when Labor Day fell on the calendar. But it felt like it was the shortest offseason.
Summer went by fast. God. Part of that is because the spring was so stinking long. I mean, our summer here would last all of, what, about 10 days? Yeah. I think
it was cold and rainy. Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, it was cold and rainy most of the time.
Yeah.
And so we really, I mean, it seemed like it was an extension of the spring, mm-hmm. which means we really didn't have much of a summer up here in the Northeast except for like about 10 days.
Right.
So I think you're right in that regard. It did go by fast. You know, the draft went by, came and went pretty quickly. Patriots obviously, you know, didn't have the one or decided to give up the one. They ended up bringing in Pat Chung. Before we get to some of these emails, what are your overall impressions? And I know it's very early, but because the Patriots kept a pretty solid number of their draftees and had new players in an effort to get this whole squad younger, not just the defense, but the entire squad, what are some of your impressions through to this point in time of the newcomers to this roster?
You're talking about just the rookies?
Rookies right now.
Well, I was underwhelmed with Pat Chung's tape that we were given. I mean, so the listeners know, we have, prior to the draft, PFW gets access, and our friends at Kraft Sports and Patriots Today, we get access to about 5 to 7 minutes worth of player tape.
On
just about all of the major guys who are in the draft. That's a few hundred players.
Correct.
And we watch all of it. We watch every frame of it on all these guys so that we have a better understanding of who they are and what they bring to the table coming into the draft. And from what I saw of Pat Chung's tape, he looked like a solid kick and punt return guy. He wasn't my favorite safety, but he was the number one safety listed on all the preseason or pre-draft rankings. And he was the first guy listed on the tape, and they usually do it the same way, that the better the player, supposedly the earlier they come on the tape. He was the first safety that came up. And I got to be honest with you, there were other safeties that I was more impressed with. And he's done nothing to change that in my mind since he's been here this summer. Great guy, good to talk to, great in the locker room, has shown actually less in punt returns than he did on his tape. He's had some questionable judgment with letting balls bounce and not being able to control them.
Right.
A little bit better as far as his safety play goes. So what I saw on tape was just the reverse of what I saw in person, a little bit from him.
Okay.
Brace, obviously he started in that first game against Philadelphia. In Ty Warren's absence, it was Seymour, Wilfork, Pryor, and Brace in the 4-3 coming out in there. You know, he seems like he's ready to go. He seems like he's an NFL player. He's shown me more than I saw on his tape. I wasn't really impressed with his
when
tape
I was
either.
Doing BC football a few years ago, and Ron Brace had just come into the program, saw the size and his ability to move for a young kid that size. I'm thinking, this guy's got a future. And he has taken advantage of everything that not only have they taught him at Boston College, but now that the Patriots are trying to instruct in him. Mm-hmm. And I think he can be a standout player. If not an all-pro player, he certainly can be a solid contributor for many years in this league if he chooses to do so.
And that's what I've seen. Another thing we should mention about those pre-draft tapes we get, a lot of times we get bad quality tape. We don't get a lot of highlights. Well, we get a lot of sideline
shots. You're at the mercy of the schools and their videotape operators.
Right. So a lot of times we make a judgment on a guy based on a very limited amount of footage. And in Brace's case, he didn't really show us a lot on that tape, but he's certainly proven himself in training camp.
You just had to ask me about Ron Brace. Come on. What are you thinking?
I should have known better. I was too busy asking you about Brian Arakpo.
And did I come through with
you? You came through big time. The guy.
And who did I tell you about this year?
Sergio
Kindle,
outside linebacker, who the Patriots might be in the market for again next year.
They will be lining him up as a rush end quite a bit. Mm-hmm. He will be playing, ironically, somewhat of a Derek Burgess-style role for the Texas Longhorns.
Well, then he's certainly somebody we got to keep an eye on.
Yeah.
Darius Butler, overall, I've been impressed with his play. He's gotten a lot of reps this preseason. He's looked better than Terrence Wheatley, who's in his second year, has looked. He's made some plays, recovered some fumbles, made some good hits. Gotten burned a couple of times, but you expect that from a rookie cornerback. All in all, I think, though, he's the real deal, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do either in the nickel or as a starter, however they're going to play him, and maybe even as a return man.
Mm-hmm.
So I've liked what I've seen out of him. Obviously, Jake Ingram, another rookie, won the long snapper job. I wasn't totally surprised by that because when you invest a draft pick in a long snapper.
I just thought, though, that
bringing
a guy in like Nathan Hodel from Arizona, who was on that Arizona Super Bowl team, I thought it would almost end up being a slam dunk. So they really must like long-term viability, if not, a money deal with the guy like Ingram.
Yeah. Hodel's situation was weird. I know we're veering off a little bit, but he signed an extension last year with Arizona.
Yeah.
And then played the 2008 season and then was cut at the end of it. So I think he had a four-year extension going into 2008, one year of it, and then they got rid of him.
I think they cut him probably deciding that, why are we then sending our long snapper on to a long-term deal?
Well, we did it here for a while. We had Lonnie Paxton.
Lonnie Paxton was damn near perfect while he was here.
Right.
Perfect. So. Over a long period of time.
Right.
And that perfectness for a long snapper was rewarded by Denver.
Right. Getting back to the rookie question, the guy that obviously everybody's talking about, and rightly so, I think, is Julian Edelman, because he's not only was he a low-round pick, a seventh-round pick, he was changing positions. He was a quarterback at Kent State, not the tallest guy, not the biggest guy in the world, but maybe an inch or two taller than Wes Welker and not much bigger weight-wise. He's changing positions to wide receiver and kick returner, or punt returner. And he had some struggles very early on in camp. His first two punts, actually, he couldn't field.
Right.
He fumbled both of them.
Yeah.
But then he comes back in the Eagles game and returns one for a touchdown, and he fielded the other ones pretty securely.
Right.
And as a wide receiver, he's looked very, very good. He looked like he's played the position before. So when you have a guy like that who couldn't possibly do anything but exceed expectations, you're kind of disappointed when he doesn't. And in this case, he has. He's done very well. And the only problem with him is he's been hurt a lot this preseason, and he wasn't at practice today, we don't think. We'll have to find that out later for sure. But he's certainly a guy to keep an eye on, especially on a wide receiver core that you've got Moss, Welker, Galloway are pretty much entrenched as the 1-2-3. When you go 4 and 5 wides, he's going to be out there.
Edelman should be out there.
He should be out there.
My initial impression, and I guess my thoughts on the younger players, the ones that stand out from a positive sense, Brace certainly, Edelman certainly, Myron Pryor especially, just because of the fact that he was a sixth-round draft pick and getting a lot of time early and getting a start in the opening preseason game along those lines. But in a negative sense, it was Pat Chung. Now, I don't mean to rank on a kid who is – obviously a rookie and got a long way to go. I just have not been overly impressed with anything I've seen. And maybe it's just me, but when they slipped him out into some coverage situations in that last preseason game, he was lost.
Yeah,
I hope that is not the case for him during the regular season. I'm sure that the Patriots will pick and choose their opportunities to work him into situations where he can be successful, and they'll bring him along. My guess is, folks, more slowly than they brought along a guy like Brandon Merriweather, who, frankly, a lot of other people, a lot of fans over the course of the last year or so have thought, you know, oh, maybe this is a potential bust. We've got an email on this program thinking that, well, Merriweather's not doing what we thought he would do. Well, you know, it'd be a high draft pick. And yet,
his rookie year, you're right.
And here's Merriweather. He's going to be a starter, and you're going to be relying on him now. I'm not sure I still see the same upside for Chung as I saw for Merriweather, because I had seen Merriweather play extensively at Miami, and always thought that he had the capability of being a big-time player.
Well, he made a huge transition from year one to year two, Merriweather did.
Yes.
And as I said, the only thing that's missing in my mind with him is his tackling ability. He tries to make that big hit, knock people out all the time.
He doesn't
knock
wrap
the ball.
People up, yeah.
That's all you got to do in this league. Just wrap somebody up and let a teammate come in and help out if you're tackling someone who's too big.
Right.
And maybe they'll knock the ball out. Just get the guy. Don't let him get away, because then you end up getting 30 and 40 yards on a play that should only go five.
Right.
But he made a transition from year one to year two that was evident. His big problem his rookie year, in addition to the tackling, was dropping interceptions. And last year he led the team with four.
Right.
If he can continue to make that sort of progress, then he'll prove himself worthy of that first-round status. It's just way too early with Chung at this point. I mean, Merriweather had those questions going into his rookie year, too, and he's certainly, you know, over time proven that he's at least worthy of starting on this team.
No question. And, so, I guess I'm willing, you know, to give him the benefit of the doubt, as I know that the Patriots coaching staff will be, because he was a high draft pick. So, fact remains is that, you know, he'll get every opportunity to earn his role, earn his keep, play his way into a regular role. And if that means this year and probably next, well, then that's probably what it means.
There are just so many questions on this defense, John, and Chung is one of them. This year, there's just so many questions about individuals, about positions as a whole, personnel groupings. A lot of questions. I don't know if we've had this
more
many
questions defensively than certainly offensively.
Oh yeah,
that's where all the questions lie, and I think that's why there's just a little twinge of maybe it's apprehension, maybe it's uneasiness, but I don't get that we have the same air of confidence around the confines of Gillette Stadium here as we've had in previous years when you knew the team was going to be good. And I think everybody expects this team still to be good and still to be an elite team in the NFL and still to be a legitimate AFL, AFC / Super Bowl contender. But I just don't sense that everybody's buying in, Eric. Mm-hmm. I really don't right now. And I think a lot of it has to do, and a lot of it is self-inflicted.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of it is self-inflicted by the roster moves, the choices that, you know, the powers that be have made. Yep. Not only with Pat Chung, but certainly with Richard Seymour and everybody else. It's come and gone. And, you know, the underlying reasons for Teddy Bruschi retiring and Mike Vrabel being traded away to Kansas City. And, you know, and I think we all kind of realized Rodney Harrison was going. But
sure,
you're still missing a huge piece of the puzzle in terms of leadership and toughness in that defensive backfield.
And, you know, the point has been made before, but it's worth saying again. Those guys that were lost were, at one point, the young, new, untested guys who had to fill in for someone and prove themselves.
That's true.
So there, with every closed door, there's an open window somewhere, and there's an open window for a lot of guys this year on this team. It's just they're all happening so quickly and at the same time.
That's a great point. It's happening more quickly than I think anybody was really prepared for.
Yeah.
We're prepared for small moves. Couple of moves, you know, one or two players to change over, and you want to see a gradual change over the course of, what, 2, 3, 4 years?
Mm-hmm.
What we saw was wholesale fire sale changes being made. I mean, when you're talking about 5, 6 new starters defensively, and the backups even changing as well, you're talking about big-time changes.
Right.
We're biting off more than I think most people, ourselves and most fans, really thought this team either could or should bite off.
It's drastic changes, like you
drastic
said.
Drastic.
It's not change. It hasn't been gradual change.
No.
And people, for the most part, are averse to change until they get settled into a routine and they see that the change is for the better. You know, 4 weeks from now, 6 weeks from now, we could be here sitting here saying, you know, the Pats have the, you know, a top 10 defense in the league.
And if they do?
And if they do, great.
You know what? Then I will be the one of the first ones to congratulate him and plaudit them, and I'll be happy to say, you know, I was wrong about the whole Richard Seymour thing, but as of today, right, as of this moment, okay, you certainly have to give Bill the benefit of the doubt, but I want verification. I want to see this happen, because on the surface of it, I don't like the move, because I, as a fan now, not as someone who covers the team, but as a fan, these are two different hats we must wear around here. And I must wear especially. I don't like the move. I really don't. I want to win now.
Yeah. I mean, there's no guarantee that they will or won't based on this move, but we have to wait and see. How many times has a team gone 0 for the preseason and then gone on to be 12-4, 13-3 in the regular season? You know, we put a lot of stock in what we see in preseason, but
you really can't.
Honestly, you can't.
You really can't, although, you know, I mean, fact is that the Patriots, when they last won the Super Bowl, they were 2-2 in the preseason. This year they were 3-1, and we talked about this last week on Patriots Friday, if you weren't logged on, but, you know, Chris Price and I both thought that there was a concerted effort, and even we had Logan Mankins in here and Dan Copen in here with us, and they both said there was more of an effort put to winning exhibition games this year than at any time they could remember in their young careers, because of the taste last year's preseason left in everyone's mouth. Now, ultimately, it really didn't affect what happened last year, because what happened last year was in week one when Tom Brady went down. And I think it almost helped the team in a rallying point. There's every bit the opportunity and every bit the chance that last year's preseason could have left that team flat to start, but we'll never really know. Brady going down in week one last year against Kansas City was the jolt that this team needed to get itself into gear.
And they did pretty well going 11-5.
Very representative. Very well. I really don't think.
Could have easily been a playoff team.
It probably should have been, yes. But, I mean, how much better could they have been than 11-5 last year? Maybe one game.
But that's asking a lot from a guy who hadn't started since high school.
You're asking a lot. Absolutely. So I'm just saying that this is a...
But that's a good point about the preseason, because the tenor was set when Bill released his schedule for training camp.
Yes.
And he started out with 7 straight two-a-days.
Which...
And it ended up being 9.
And that's very old school, by the way. That's how they used to do it before the NFL became a year-round business.
Right. Yeah. We've sort of gotten spoiled in the last decade or decade and a half with sort of powder puff training camps. And even in the two-a-days, they're not hitting. It's not full contact game hitting. There's wrapping up. There's a little bit of contact. There are a couple of drills where they go head-to-head, full speed, full tilt. But for the most part, it's not even... Even in full pad practices, it's not even that. But
correct.
That said, you still don't get. I mean, practicing twice a day takes a mental and physical toll on you, regardless of whether you're hitting or not. And they ended up going 8 straight days with two a days, and on the 9th day, I think he gave them a break. They were supposed to have a two a day, and he gave them just a walkthrough in the morning, and took the afternoon off.
So they set a tone.
They set a tone.
Physical. Mentally tough tone early.
And in previous training camps, you would see there'd be some practices where they would manage veterans' participation. If there was a two-a-day, maybe a guy would play one practice in the morning and take the afternoon off, or vice versa. There was a little bit of that this year with certain players, certain skill position players who had to do a lot of running, and you might want to save their legs a little bit. But in particular, a guy like Tom Brady, whose arm was managed in previous camps where he would not show up for. He was at every single training camp practice. Every single one.
Which.
That tells you something, too.
Yeah, it didn't happen a lot.
That's a signal for other players on the team, too.
Sets a tone.
If the quarterback's going to be there the whole time, we're going to be here the whole time.
Sets a tempo. That's exactly right. All right, let's sneak in a few emails here. Webradio@patriots.com. And again, if you'd like to pick up the phone, you can do so at 508-543-7482. We will let you listen into Tom Brady's press conference in just a little bit as well. And one of the things that we will do inside the playbook is we play these press conferences and a lot of the locker room interviews that you hear, we play them in total. We don't cut them up. We don't give you soundbite snippets. We give you certainly the player's response, but we let you hear the questions of the interviewers so you can get the full and total context. It's not a question of being lazy, because we don't have anybody that can or can't edit them. That goes without saying. But
we don't, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. But fact is that one of the things we can do in this particular venue is we have the time on our side here, the luxury of being able to allow you as a fan, as a consumer of football, to hear in what context are these questions being asked.
Right,
which I think is very important.
Well, in a lot of cases,
when you're
in
the locker room, especially.
Because if you read an answer a lot of times, you're not getting the true feel of the answer.
That's exactly right.
You know, it could be misinterpreted.
You can go online and read a story on whatever website you want to go to. And I'm sure you all have your favorites, and a lot of them we utilize in terms of our own edification
right.
and our own research.
Right.
But when it comes down to hearing these players and these coaches and what they have to say, sometimes the answers are somewhat predictable.
Yep. But you need
the question to understand where the answer is coming mm-hmm. from. So we have that ability here, and that's why we do this inside the playbook.
But
it's
John,
all about
we should be honest.
I have no formal arts.
Editing training.
It's pretty good, Jason. You're learning. He's learning.
Yeah,
he's definitely
it took
learning.
Him a while.
Todd says, do you think the Patriots were shopping Seymour or Oakland approached us?
Ooh,
that's a good question.
That's a good question. It's a tough question.
I think, and again, this is just my opinion, Todd. I think it was both, and it's not a cop out. I do think that the Patriots probably put it out in some circles that, you know what, we have some people here that you might be interested in. Give us a call.
Well, they certainly have had open conversations with them throughout this offseason.
I think they went to Oakland simply because Oakland is their bitch.
Well. It suddenly turned into PFW in progress. You totally threw me for a loop there, John. Is it that chair? Is it Fred Kirsch
it's
taking
the chair.
Over you?
It's the
Are you
chair.
Channeling Fred Kirsch?
Fred has taken over.
Wow.
Stripper sent you that?
He's an Wow. Week one. Not even week
Thank
one.
You.
It's pre-week one. Yeah. He's already throwing those kind of things out there.
Well, let's face
it's a new year.
That is something.
It's a new year.
That is something that every fan who's listening right now also thinks.
Probably. You're probably right.
Okay.
Yeah.
About strippers?
Very good, Jace. No, about Oakland. Let's face it. They have used and abused the Raiders in the recent past.
Yep.
And this is just another example of that.
Well, yeah. I mean, the Randy Moss deal was obviously a one-sided deal for our end. You know, we got the better end of that deal, clearly.
Yep.
But as for the Seymour thing, they've been talking with Oakland about Burgess since before the draft. I mean, that I believe was, you know, Bill, I think Bill even came out and said, you know, there have been discussions for a while about Burgess. So there's been that open channel of communication this offseason.
Right.
Who knows what else was talked about? What other players might have come up in conversation? I think it's entirely possible that his name could have come up. Then again, it could have just been... There's so many. It's hard to speculate because there's so many.
I realize that that's a tough question to answer. You know. And by the way, anybody that would have been offended to that remark, I apologize. Get over it. Okay. Next.
I think we're going to need a disclaimer for this show now too.
Might as well.
Oh no. One of the reasons I know Eric likes to be on this show is because we try to deal with above board things here, and we don't get into innuendo and Andyisms.
Right.
So I'll try to do right by you, Eric. Okay. Brent in Illinois says, John, can you remember a trade in the NFL where a player who was traded refused to show up to the new team? Is there any history to guide us here? And by the way, he says the Buffalo logo is ugly. So, honestly, I saw this email when it came in about an hour ago. And I'm
trying to think.
Off the top of my head, I would have to say no. I don't believe that there is a precedent. I really don't. Especially now, I'm talking about in the current context of free agency, because you have to sort of define the NFL in free agent era and pre-free agent era, because it's two different leagues. It really is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's two different versions of pro football.
Right.
But in the free agent era...
Yeah, because before...
Guys didn't have the opportunity... breaking new ground.
Right. Before, trades were the only way players changed teams. Before free agency.
Right.
So when a trade happened, you pretty much were, you went. It was one of those
things. I mean, we've had guys that have refused to show or refused to go to a team, I believe, that have been drafted and gone back into the draft, I believe.
Well, the only one I can think of that actually, John Elway refused to play for the team that drafted him.
Yes.
The Baltimore Colts at the time.
Correct.
And then they traded him to Denver.
Yes,
before he could
be drafted again.
Right.
He did not go back, but he certainly could have.
He could have, but I don't I don't know if anybody's I don't think anybody has ever gone through the whole drill.
No, but in a Seymour situation where you have a player that has refused to report and therefore he would be suspended for the year.
I can't think of an example.
Now, the Patriots, of course, back a few years ago when Terry Glenn was a part of the team, they suspended him. But that was after the season had started? After the regular season had started? I'm trying to remember off the top of my head.
I think that was before. I think it was the end of the preseason.
End of the preseason,
similarly? I think it was.
But he eventually reported.
He reported during training camp.
During training camp.
But then, I'm having my memories.
That's the only thing,
on
honestly, and again, I'm thinking out loud here because we're trying to do the show and I haven't had a chance to really research
this.
But
he ended up getting released.
Well,
correct?
Yes. Yeah.
And then Green Bay picked him up.
And Green Bay picked him up. So, I'm just trying, and he obviously chose to go to Green Bay, or, you know, reported to Green Bay. But that's the only thing that comes off the top of my head researching.
I can't think of any other player who's refused to go to the team to.
So we've never had an instance, at least in modern day football,
not that we can think of
a guy who sat out an entire season because he refused to report to the team that he was traded to.
I can't think.
Therefore, losing not only his eligibility that year, but losing his salary and losing a year of veteran credit.
Yeah.
Toward free agency.
I remember Joey Galloway, when he was with Seattle, was looking for a new contract from them, and he sat out much of the regular season. He was playing flag football with his friends. I don't know if you remember that year. I can't remember exactly what year that was. But
Galloway?
But he wasn't. He ended up with Dallas. I don't know if it was that year or not, though, but.
Was it Dallas? Again, I guess.
He went from Seattle to Dallas, but there was that year when he set out for a lot of the season.
Yeah.
Contract dispute, but it had nothing to do with a trade or anything.
No.
I can't think of a specific example of a trade.
All right. Well, we're sitting here talking off the cuff, and we probably one of us should be typing it up here. We'll see if we can get to Jason or someone on that to answer the question. Here comes a vote. Or we'll have a listener who will research it for us and let us know. Send us an email, webradio@patriots.com. Here's one that comes from Anthony in Longmeadow, Mass., who says, blind faith and trust in BB. I love the fact that the Pats are led by someone who has no fear. No fear of the unknown, no fear of what fans think, no fear of offending a player's feelings, no fear of job security. Because of this, he builds the team for both now and the future. We are in good hands.
Okay.
So he's buying it hook, line, and sinker.
All right. I mean, that's kind of what I would expect from Patriots fans, though. Given what I said, I mean, Belichick has proven himself here. The cracks are starting to come, though, because it's been so long since they've won a Super Bowl and because of the confluence of so many questionable moves that the team has made this offseason and this preseason with players who were brought in who didn't end up making the team and players who've left the team.
Right.
The Galloway example I was talking about, it was 1999, he set out the first eight games.
Eight games, okay.
Ended up playing in the final eight, started four of them, was traded to Dallas after the season for two first-round picks.
Okay. Well, there is a rule.
But he reported to Dallas.
Well, we did this with what was the deal with Asante Samuel a few years ago?
He held out.
He held out.
Until right before week one.
Right.
And could have sat out until week 10 without being penalized the yearly salary and without being penalized the accrued year of his NFL tenure.
Tenure, right.
But he ended up coming back at the last possible minute before the regular season started and played the rest of the season.
See, that's what I think will end up happening here with Seymour, frankly. I think he'll probably, if he doesn't have the assurances that he won't be franchised, which I don't think he's going to get. I'd be stunned if he got that. Then my guess is he'll wait until the last minute. He'll show up probably Friday, you know, in time to report, you know, to be eligible for week one with Oakland because he doesn't want to take a chance on having the Patriots issue that 5-day letter.
Yeah. Would it be the Patriots who would have to issue the letter?
I believe
that's what I'm not sure about.
I believe so. I think it reverts back to the team from whence you came.
But when does that happen?
Because technically he has not become property of Oakland yet until he reports.
Right, but when my question is how long does he have until it reverts back to the Patriots?
I believe It's up to the franchise. It's up to the Patriots. They could issue that letter today.
But according to Bill, they don't have rights to him. They can't talk about him. They can't do anything with him.
I'm not sure that's entirely correct, Eric. I don't know. So let's face it, we're dealing in somewhat uncharted territory here.
Which makes it a more interesting story.
That would be
in some regard,
sure, and that would obviously be Coach Belichick's interpretation of that particular rule. I'm just being fair here.
I'm not trying to slam anybody. No, I know.
I'm being fair here. We don't know. And unless someone explains that to us, how the heck are we supposed to know?
That's why I think he keeps being asked these questions repeatedly.
And he doesn't answer them. Which is his right.
Sure.
But that's why this stuff goes on.
It doesn't clear up
the issue. And my guess is he'd say, well, it's not going to clear up the issue. You're still going to ask anyway. Fine.
Well, if the issue is cleared up, there's nothing to ask.
Well, we certainly wouldn't be able to ask a question about that, now would we? I believe, again, it's just my belief, and we'll see if we can find out where that rule might be, but it's my belief that it reverts. The Patriots are the team that would have to issue. You've got 5 days to report to your new team. Because the contract, I believe, still belongs to New England.
Until he
reports to Oakland.
Reports over there.
That's just my belief. That's interesting.
Fascinating stuff, though.
It is.
To start the season.
To start the season. And it just wouldn't be a Patriots season without some controversy. Lawyer Malloy.
It's never boring.
Ty Law.
It's never boring in Foxborough, John.
Santi Samuel and now we got Richard Seymour.
Never boring in Foxborough.
This is true. I think that's part of the reason why I like being here. This one comes from John, who says, there is a difference between blind faith and wait to see what happens. I was outraged when Drew Bledsoe, Ty Law, and Curtis Martin left, but it worked out. I think Bill has earned enough the right to have at least a game or two before I start acting like an idiot.
I think he deserves more than a game or two, even.
That's fair. I think that's a fair comment.
I mean, because especially with a defense or even an offense, any part of the team that has so many new players, new moving parts to it, there's going to be an adjustment time. 2007 was the exception with that offense. From week one on, they were a machine, and they didn't need much time to come together. I think that's an aberration, though. Most of the time, you get so many new players that come into a system, it's going to take at least 6 to 8 games before they're all comfortable with each other and before you know what you have.
At least.
Well, so I think one or two games is even a little too knee-jerk a reaction.
Maybe.
I think you have to wait till after the London game till you really know what this team is.
That's fair.
That's the bye week. We can get to the bye week, and that's 7 games at that point?
That's 7 games.
You know, if they're 5-2, I think you got to be happy.
Well, frankly, I won't be happy with 5-2 after 7 games looking at the schedule.
But realistically, with all that's gone on, with all the changes, you know, it's not an easy schedule.
Okay, well, let's just go through it. Now that you brought it up, you got Buffalo.
That should be a win.
You're at New York.
That should be a win.
Atlanta at home.
That can be a tough one.
Sure could be, but I think it's at home, and I think you should win it. Baltimore at home.
Again, like Atlanta, it's a tough one.
Well, I think Baltimore.
Could go either way.
I think Baltimore would be tougher than Atlanta. That's just me. At Denver.
I think they win that game easily.
Tennessee.
Another tough one.
Tampa.
They should win that one easily.
Okay. So you're thinking potentially either Atlanta or Baltimore and Tennessee could be losses. So you're thinking 5-2 at worst.
I think 5-2 is realistic.
I'm saying 6-1, brother.
Sure. I mean, I'll take that. But I'm just saying,
I think they should win both of the home games.
At the very least, if you're 5-2, I think you're in good shape. If you're anything worse than that, you're in trouble.
I think they should win both the home games. Frankly, I'd be disappointed if they lose to Tennessee here. In all honesty.
I think those 3 games that I mentioned could go either way. And it's ironic that they're all home games, the ones that I think have the most question.
Well, when you look at it, you could certainly make a good argument for the fact that the first 7 games are tougher than the last 9.
Because here's the thing. Denver's a mess. They should beat up on McDaniel's
team. I would
think
so.
The Jets have been running their mouth. Head coach has been running his mouth so much. They're going to take care of that team.
Yeah.
Buffalo is in shambles, as we talked about.
Right.
Matt Ryan's a good quarterback, and he's got a good offense. That's going to be a great test for this defense. If they can shut down the Falcons' offense, I think we're going to know what type of defense we're going to have. Mm-hmm. We can expect for the rest of the year. Same with, Baltimore. Flacco's a good quarterback, but he doesn't really have anyone to throw to on this year's team.
Mm-hmm.
So they're probably going to win that game. The Atlanta and Tennessee games are going to be the big tests in the first half of the season as to what type of defense this is.
Muhammad sends this email. He says, great show. Good luck to you guys this season. Longtime Patriots fan, but I have to say that I don't have pure faith in Bill Belichick. What I had was pure faith in Bill Belichick and Scott Pioli. That was a great tandem, but now my fear is that there are so few to none examples of successful coaches who are also the GM in the history of the NFL that Belichick himself will hurt the franchise.
Oh.
This year's cuts are very mysterious. Why trade Dave Thomas? Why cut Ryan O'Callaghan? Cutting both Greg Lewis and Alex Smith? Those guys cost fifth rounders. How did Slater stay with the team even with an injury? How DL, defensive lineman Myron Pryor, make the team when he was injured most of the preseason? With linebackers such a priority, why trade out of the first round when Larry English, Troy Malalaga, I can never pronounce
Ray Malaluga.
His name. Yeah, Ray Malaluga, and others were available? As a fan, I can't help but think the defense will bring down this team, so then they trade Big Say? Wow. That's actually, you know what? I think that's a pretty good email, Muhammad. I do. I think that's a good
there's
email.
Not much to disagree with.
And there's all legitimate points that are made there.
Yeah, you can make any of those arguments are legitimate arguments.
Sure,
you know, I don't necessarily agree with all of them, but they're not far-fetched arguments to make. They're reasonable arguments, I think.
You know, he had pure faith in Bill Belichick and Scott Pioli, and that's one thing that really has not been discussed at all in regards to this whole Richard Seymour story.
Well, I think that's why you saw them bring in a guy like Floyd Rees to fill. I mean, he certainly has a longer resume and a more proven resume than Scott Pioli did. And I think a lot of the role that Pioli had here is taken up by Rees. And you combine that with Nick Caserio, who's doing a lot of different things for this organization. He's helping coach the wide receivers. He's the player personnel director. He's involved in front office stuff. I don't see the loss of Pioli as being as big a problem as Muhammad does. But that said, Belichick and his crew are stretched a little bit more thin this year because there's a lot of newness. There are a lot of new roles that are being taken on by different people in this organization, and you know, until we start seeing the results of all of that, people aren't going to be satisfied, and you know, I think rightfully so.
Ian sends an email. He says Jake Plummer got traded from the Broncos to the Bucks and then retired before reporting to Bucks camp. Not the exact same situation, but it is an example of a player being traded and then refusing to attend.
Good example, but yeah, he chose to just put all end to it and
right.
Retire.
That's a good
Seymour's
one.
Not going to retire.
No, he's not. But that's a good one, though. Thank you,
yep.
Ian. Appreciate
yep.
that. All right, so there you go. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-543-7482. I'm going to sneak in a timeout, and then we'll let you listen in to Tom Brady coming up inside the playbook.
At American Airlines, we know it seems like you're on the road almost as much as your favorite sports team. We know you've scheduled a business trip to a city where your team happens to be playing that night. And we know that on every trip, you inevitably forget to bring a toothbrush. But you never forget that old pair of socks you wear on game day to bring your team luck. We know for you, it's not just a seat on a flight to a place. It's a seat on a flight to your life. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
Okay, so to recap, these are last year's sales results, and here's how we stand now. I need some clutch players who can get us some numbers up on the board. Ted.
Yes, sir.
In the fourth quarter. We've come from behind in the fourth quarter before. Ted,
what?
I need you here in the shotgun. Put on this helmet.
It's a garbage can.
Do it.
But it's dark in here.
Susan!
Yes?
What? You're going to reverse right and then break left at the cubicle.
What?
I am?
Let's go!
Mr. Krevelin?
That was awkward.
Think football? Bank football. Get Patriots banking only from Bank of America. Get the Patriots logo on your checks, debit card, and your Patriots Extra Points credit card. Use Extra Points rewards to get tickets or even stand on the sidelines during pregame warm-ups. Plus, you get a bonus match on your Keep the Change savings. To get Patriots banking, go to a banking center or bankofamerica.com/patriots.
You got?
Yes.
What?
Yes.
What?
You can take the trash can off now.
What?
Keep the Change patent pending. Credit card programs are issued and administered by FIA Card Services NA, Bank of America NA, member FDIC, copyright 2009, Bank of America Corporation.
Hello?
50 seasons of New England Patriots football. 3 Super Bowl championships. Endless memories.
It's good! It's good! Adam Vinatieri!
Live them all at the Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Celebrate the greatest players, moments, and teams in Patriots history with sights and sounds that put you right in the action. Step inside the huddle as Tom Brady calls the plays. Go under the hood and review controversial calls just like a replay official. Learn the playbook from head coach Bill Belichick. Take your best shot at a game-winning field goal in the snow and let the confetti rain down while you gaze at the Patriots' three Vince Lombardi trophies.
Back-to-back, 3 out of 4. Yes, it's a dynasty.
And don't miss the 30-foot-high displays honoring the team's greatest players or the signature film showing the history of football in New England. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, is located next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Mass. And is open 7 days a week. Call 508-698-4800 for more information or go online to thehall@patriotplace.com. The Hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. An unforgettable, exciting, interactive experience.
Continue inside Patriots Playbook and our inaugural edition for the 2009 NFL season. John Rook here with you. Our thanks to Eric Scalavino from Patriots Football Weekly and PFW in Progress for joining us today. And Eric will be a frequent, if not regular, contributor here inside the Playbook throughout the course of the season. I'm going to take a couple of moments here. And again, the email address, webradio@patriots.com. For your thoughts on whether or not you have blind faith in Bill Belichick and this whole Richard Seymour affair. Or if you're not like Eric, or not like me anyway, and you're thinking, okay, trust but verify. You need to see something out on the field that would indicate that this team is going to be okay before you're ready to get behind it altogether. And your thoughts on which way you side are welcome. Webradio@patriots.com. In the meantime, though, let's catch you up to date with Patriots quarterback Tom Brady in his conference call.
Can we turn this down? Let's not... Thanks, Face. How you guys doing? Who wants to start? Your short press conference.
How are you feeling? Talk about the excitement. First game of the season for you.
It's a... all the players are excited. I can assure you that. The camp's come and gone. And I think we've made the improvements that we've needed to make over the last month. But... you know, this is where the test comes, and it's really a long journey, but it's always exciting to start on Monday night against a division rival, a team we have a lot of respect for, so hopefully we go out and play our best.
A little more exciting for you because this is your first game in over a year? A little more anxious, I should say?
Well, I played three of them in the last month, so, you know, I think a lot of those first game jitters are gone. It's a regular season football game, so... There's always a lot of excitement because we like I said, we've come out of a tough camp, but it's going to be fun for all of us to get out there and have a regular season game.
Tom, I know you say that you always see changes inevitable in the NFL, but when you look at that defense and you have five guys status gone from last year,
yep.
Are you surprised at how quickly that happened, and you know, what does that say about this team?
But every, you know, I think the thing is every team has turnover. Every team has changed, and I think because we've, you know, had some pretty good success here, we've a lot of those fixtures like O'Rodney or Mike or Larry or Rodney or Richard, obviously, you know, people recognize those names and those faces, and because they're part of the winning. But you know, guys get older and guys. Move on and retire, and you know, I think we've really noticed that in the last couple of years, but it's been happening for a long time with Roman Pfeiffer and Willie and Troy Brown, David Patton, all those guys moved on too, Dion, David, so I've seen all of it, and I'm very fortunate to be in the same places my entire career, so like I said the other day, you know, it's going to happen to all of us at one point. And I think the important thing is for the guys who are here to go out there and prepare and be coachable, just as coach wants us to be. So it's pretty easy when you walk in, it says do your job on the door. And that's all the guys really try to follow that approach.
How significant is it to miss the leadership component of that? You know, just in one offseason, Bruschi, Vrabel, Harrison, a lot of guys, Seymour, a lot of guys that have been key leaders in that clubhouse.
Yeah, well, it remains to be seen because there's other guys who step into that leadership role. So you can't replace those guys. They brought a ton of experience playing at a very high level. And it's not like you can bring another Teddy Bruschi in the door or Richard Seymour. Other guys have to really grow and mature in their play, but also in their leadership role. And with those other guys moving on, it really opens up a spot for them to be able to do that. And there's a lot of young players on the team. There's a lot of new players. But from my feeling in the locker room, I feel there's some very positive leadership from all those positions.
Tom, there's also been a lot of continuity on offense. I mean, you're basically playing with the same guys you started with last year. A couple of new people.
Yep.
Brett Taylor, obviously. Joey Galloway.
Yeah.
Are you surprised that some of the other new guys that they brought in didn't stick? And what does it mean to you also to have that kind of continuity between, you know, what you're familiar with and what you're going into the season with now?
Yeah, it's very. Because a lot of those guys have had those spots, especially on the offensive line. The running back group is a veteran group. Randy and West, they're not coming off the field very often. And at tight end, I mean, I think, you know, Ben's really been a staple there going on his sixth season. So the continuity as an offense is always important because it requires a lot of communication and anticipation. So does defense, but offense, if one guy does the wrong thing, the play doesn't go well. So for us to have the opportunity to play together for as many games as we've had, it's you can make corrections that much faster. So rather than, I said, you know, wait until Monday morning to make the correction, you can make it as you walk off for the first series of how you want to handle something. And it's something that we have done in the past and we're familiar with and that hopefully you can apply toward later in the game.
Tom, when you're doing how much time did you spend thinking about Monday night and what it's going to be like just kind of getting there?
Well, it's really been a progression of steps. You know, first you gotta be able to get up and do the off-season program and do that sort of conditioning, and then you gotta be able to participate in the camps and then continue your training until training camp. So, that's always been a goal. It's been a goal for all of us, I can assure you that. I mean, it's nobody likes to sit out like I did last year. And really, I think the way our season ended last year, no one really enjoyed the off season very much either. So everybody's excited to get back and anxious for the season and open up against a team like Buffalo, who always presents some unique challenges for us. Very well-coached team. Great fundamentals, very disciplined team. So we got our work cut out for us.
Personally, how excited are you, though? It's been a calendar year since you played in a game that's been meaningful, so to speak. Personally, how do you feel about finally getting back out there?
Yeah, I feel great about, you know, where we're at as a team. I feel, you know, personally, I'm excited like all the guys are excited. I played a lot of games, so it's not like it's the first game of my rookie season, that type of excitement. I think there's just an excitement for a new season and to see what kind of team we have and to see what kind of mental toughness we have and what kind of character we have. And we're going to be faced with plenty of adversity this year, and I want to see how we respond to that. But it's always exciting to start the year, and you know, especially playing on Monday night.
When the
injury
going on last year, what were you
doing? Watching, like everybody else.
Just from home or whatever?
Yeah.
What was that like?
Watching from home?
Yeah.
You know, I'd rather be playing, but that wasn't what I had to do. I was cheering the guys on and supporting the best way I could.
Do you feel as healthy now as you did going into last year's opener when you also, I mean, you didn't play in a lot of, or even healthier now than a year ago going into the opener?
Yeah, I'm very happy I was able to participate in the preseason this year. That was really important to get out there and play and get a feel for the game. And a lot of those things that have come up in the game that don't come up in practice, to be able to prepare for those and talk about that with whether it was Greg or Joey or some of the new tight ends in the preseason. And all those games are important, and the preparation for us is very important. So It was, last year was, you know, hopefully we won't have to go through something like that again in the future, but I think for this year I'm excited about where we're at.
Tom, I know Tom say that losses stick with them more than victories do, and you talked about the disappointment of last year, but the last loss that you were really a part of was the Giants game. Does that stick with you at all through this whole thing, the disappointment of not being able to finish that the way you wanted to?
Yeah, every loss that I think I've had here in my career I can remember, because it's they're always important losses. They're playoff losses, like that one, or the Indy game the year before. That was tough. That was really tough. The Denver one where I threw the interception, that was really tough. But, you know, you learn from them, and you understand that every time you take the field, there's no guarantee to victory, and you appreciate the victories when you get them, but they're hard to come by. And especially in those important games like that where you're playing the best competition under the highest amount of pressure, where it means the most. So, that was not a very memorable one.
Is it motivated at all? I mean, just because it's been a few years now since you guys have won
one. I think there's a lot of motivation. You don't necessarily need to go back a few years for motivation. I mean, you learn lessons from that game. You know, we've applied things that we've learned in that game to what we're doing today. So hopefully if the similar situation presents itself, we can act in a more efficient way. But you take those lessons and you learn from them. But motivation comes. We have plenty of motivation. We finished 11-5 last year and didn't make the playoffs and didn't win the division. And looking up at Miami, and there's new challenges with the Jets, and there's no bigger challenge than we face in Buffalo here in about 5 days.
Tom Brady with members of the Patriots media, and his conference call also with outside members of the media earlier, and you get a chance to hear it all right here inside the playbook. I'm John Rook. Let's get back to a couple of emails, and then we'll give you some thoughts on the and maybe give you a little bit of a preview of the upcoming program here on Patriots.com radio. This email comes from Christian. See if I've got the where he's sending us this email from Boston, who says, "Sorry guys, but no in Bill we trust for me with this move." Speaking of course the whole Richard Seymour scenario that has been talked about here. "I have a very high opinion Seymour, much like I have of Brady on offense. I understand he was in the last year of his deal and most likely was not coming, so they had to get something for him now. But I also understand the fact that Alzheimer's," I think he's referring to Al Davis here, "gave up a first-round pick, and that value was too good to pass up. However, you have Brady and Moss under contract for 2 more years. Surround them with the best players you can now. Am I really supposed to believe that Bill Belichick had to make this move for the future or for cap reasons? Does he not always find some way to get multiple picks and put himself in the best position come draft time? Can't they basically do anything they want as far as moving money to create cap room? Belichick obviously thinks that he has the horses on the D-line and would not have made this move otherwise. However, like all of us, since I'm not in the film room or in team meetings, I won't know that until I see it. I just hope he's right and this doesn't cost us a fourth title in 9 years. And I think Christian probably shares sentiments with many Patriots fans, including yours truly, where the whole Richard Seymour scenario is unfolding. All right, this one comes from John, who says, "John, hi, and a huge welcome back. I share the freaking out opinion of most Pats fans, but I have to think that Bill has a plan. Let's be real, Bill doesn't do anything without considering 4 options and 6 chess moves ahead. I am curious, however, to see who takes Seymour's spot. Will they draw double coverage as well?" Well, let me speak to that for a moment. I think it stands to reason that Jarvis Green will get every opportunity to assume Richard Seymour's spot, no matter what it might be in a 4-3 or a 3-4 alignment. A lot of that is because it was Jarvis Green who subbed for Seymour while injured over the course of the last few years. And I think most people thought that Jarvis Green did a better than representative job of filling in for Seymour during that time. That could have something to do with why the move was made to begin with. You also need to keep in mind that Jarvis Green is in a contract year himself. Therefore, he might have incentive to pin his ears back and play, knowing that he could be playing for next year and beyond in terms of a contract. So, yes, that certainly could factor into the equation. John says, I don't necessarily disagree with the trade, but with the timing, 1 week from the first game, I'm already nervous. Please discuss the roster options to fill the spot. He says, also, looking at week two, I can't wait to shut up Rex, eat a pizza, Ryan. Very bummed we didn't hold on to Ray Ventrone, even on the practice squad. Okay, so there you go. I'm not going to say that. I really don't have anything to disagree with. We kind of have discussed the roster options, but Jarvis Green will certainly get the first look there, and then you will probably see the team shift into other alignments where you'll see guys like Brayson Pryor and Mike Wright involved, specifically as down linemen on the front four or front three. Kelly says, are the Jets and that blowhard Rex Ryan trying to find out what O'Connell knows about the playbook? There are some stories floating out there saying just that. And to add to it, there's a rumor that O'Connell will be traded to Denver and Josh McDaniel for Brandon Marshall.
So ridiculous.
Is this all just BS or is there any validity to it? I hadn't heard the whole Denver rumor for Brandon Marshall. I can't really imagine that Denver is going to trade, you know, Brandon Marshall, regardless of what they think of his, you know, sanity or his ability to be a team player, for O'Connell. I that would stun me, and I think that would stun most people. I'm sure that there's probably some validity to his going to New York because of his knowledge of the Patriots. That would not stun me. But the Jets seem to be fairly well, you know, situated at quarterback, so it also wouldn't surprise me to see him cut after, you know, the following week, after next week's game is completed with the Jets. It also wouldn't completely shock me to see the Patriots bring him back in some form or fashion. So I think that's kind of interesting as well. I had another email, and you just erased it. Yeah, you did. You're sitting here erasing emails on
it. No, I didn't touch it.
Well, somebody's erasing emails. Is that Fred that's erasing emails in his inbox? Because I had a whole bunch of them here I hadn't yet got to, and he just erased them all.
Max from New Hampshire, is that the one you were?
Yeah.
Would you like me to read it to you, John?
Please.
While it's tough to give up a great force like Seymour at any time, isn't this a good year to do it because of the strength of the offense? With the offense looking as though it may be as prolific as 2007, shouldn't we allow a young defense to grow up together? In a couple of years, Brady, Moss, and our aging running back corps may not be scoring so easily, and that will be exactly when the staples of the defense, Seymour and Wilfork, will also be losing a step. Let's recharge the defense while the offense can weather the storm rather than fix two problems at once.
And, you know, I think, again, some good points there, but you certainly, you know, you don't want to create more problems, I think, as the emailer was suggesting here, than you already have. And I frankly believe that's part of the problem that you have now with this deal, you know, and sending Richard Seymour off. You're probably creating more problems. Now, Patriots certainly don't feel like that's the case. But, you know, you have the opportunities now. And this was my first impression when I heard about the deal over the weekend. And it is still my lasting impression after giving it a ton of thought. I've got to wonder. Your opportunity to win is now, and you have just, however slightly it might be, you have just lessened that opportunity. You need to tell Fred to make sure that he doesn't erase his emails in this account now until after 4 p.m. Eastern.
Yeah, I'll let the guys know.
Hi, Christina.
Hi there. How are you?
Make sure she's got her... Is it punched in now?
Now I'm on.
Now she's on.
How you doing?
I'm great. How's things?
Things are good. Things are rolling. And I think everybody's ready to go.
Yeah. So tell us about your show that you're going to have here coming up on Wednesdays primarily, right?
Yes, Wednesdays.
Okay.
Shop Talk. It's coming up right after this. I have a group of gentlemen from the Pro Shop, the Patriots Pro Shop, joining me, and we're going to go through all the questions fans want to know when it comes down to the best Patriots jersey available, the newest, hottest item in the Pro Shop.
The deals, the specials.
The deals, the specials, the shipping prices online, you know, everything everybody wants to know about, because it's a great store. There's a lot to offer, and these fans got to look sharp, right, at every moment.
This is going to be the radio version, then, of QVC, is that
I
right?
I think so, yes. Yeah. We're going to try to get a little fashionable with it, you know, talk about those cute pink jerseys, the red ones.
No, pink hats, kidding. Here we go.
Pink,
yeah.
I never really got the pink stuff in the beginning, but yeah, so it'll be fun, and the guys, the experts, are going to be giving us all the details.
Okay, and might we also have the opportunity for listeners to win something somewhere down the line?
Yes, that is the big hint coming up at the end of the show. I think near the end, we will have a giveaway, so it's important that you listen and take some notes and understand what everybody's saying, because there is something up for grabs. I'm not sure what it is. Jason's got to inform me. But yeah, okay. You could win some prizes listening to Shop Talk.
Incentive.
It's definitely incentive. Yes.
Awesome. And I hope from time to time we'll get a chance to get your thoughts on Patriots Today and all the good stuff that's coming up online.
Yeah,
right?
I'd love to come in from time to time. I'm right down the hallway. We're getting an internet show every day. So
What's on, for instance, today? Can you give us a sneak peek?
For instance, today, well, you know, Wednesdays are the day when we are allowed to go out to practice, see the team in action, which is, you know, their first glimpse, getting ready for the Bills. And we are going to start, you know, turning our focus towards game time today. Right. Just kind of an update on the team. Heard from quarterback Tom Brady. Always has good stuff to say about, you know, getting the team ready to go. And then tomorrow we'll have a full show on the Bills, more of a focusing on the opponent kind of show. So lots of stuff going on.
All right, beauty. Shop Talk coming up here in just a couple of moments. Tomorrow's a playbook edition. For those that have been, again, a part of it over the last few years, our regular Thursday guest will rejoin us again this season. Russell Baxter, who is the ESPN...
Baxter!
Senior coordinator for ESPN Research. And this man is the man that gives the knowledge to Chris Berman and Tom Jackson and all those guys when they're sitting on the set. He's the one that researches it and supplies it and talks in their ear. That's exactly right. And Russell has been a part of this program now for, gosh, 4 or 5 years at least now, I think, because this is our eighth. So he's been around for most of it.
But
Russell, I think so.
Eight.
I think so. Thank you, Coach. And so I think he will be here. And we also may have, well, should we not mention what we think we might have tomorrow?
No.
Okay. Jason has a surprise for tomorrow, so I guess you'll just have to tune in tomorrow hear what that surprise is. So it's great to be back with you. Great to be back with you inside the playbook for 2009. Same Pat's time, same Pat's channel, manana.